You say that on radio.
This is the Freedom Fiends. I just did. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless campground deep in the heart of enemy-occupied territory in the hand-shaped state of Michigan, altering your locus aurelius and a bazillion degrees Kelvin something or other.
Try this at home. Anyway,
we are at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, allegedly. Now, actually, I can neither confirm nor deny
what you're about to do is illegal.
At the Circuit Pike Center. Can you, Randy? Confirm Randy? Or deny our location?
No, I cannot do that. I've not been contacted by the government today.
I was contacted by the government. Worm.
Really? Yeah. What'd they say?
They said, yes, you click here to be approved on the no-call list. I wonder if there's anyone who's I'm an anarchist. I won't use the no-call list. I don't want the government to know I have a phone. Yeah.
Those are probably the ones with the Obama phone.
Yeah,
they're probably the alt-right guys. They're like, I'm a net taxpayer because I made minimum wage last year.
Yeah, I wonder if the Obama phones are pre-added on the no-call list, or maybe you can't add them on the no-call list. I don't know.
I think they're prioritized on the NSA's surveillance list. That's just my opinion.
Well, yeah, because they have to get the tracking device and bugging device in everyone's pocket, even if they can't afford it. Hey, we got a new fiend. We got John Vibes. You there, John Vibes?
I am here.
Cool. Are you at the Michigan Peace and Liberty Fest, allegedly?
I can't say, but I don't think I'm having as much fun as them guys are.
Well, it's not too late. It doesn't start till tomorrow.
They're all shooting the kratoms there, aren't they?
Randy's half in the bag. He's been shooting beer.
Yeah. Tap in the bag.
I had one, but I put 2 hours between that beer and going on the air because I'm a professional.
It's like eating and going in the pool. You have to wait an hour after drinking before you go on the air.
You have to wait an hour before you pee in the pool.
Oh, can you say it on radio? Yes, you can. All right, so you guys are at a festival that starts tomorrow, so tell me how great it is for those of us who didn't make it.
Well, I got here just before dark and set up the camper in twilight and then in darkness. So, yeah, I'm not overly impressed so far. No, there's just there's maybe 10, a dozen of us counting the Rugrats that just arrived. It's all organizers that are here. And
are the Bip Tots there?
No, they'll be here maybe tomorrow or Friday. I don't know. But these are different Bip Tots. But anyway, we're going to get up bright and early tomorrow and put up the spontaneous order tent. I think that's scheduled at some point. And welcome the people that are arriving. There will be a handful of people arriving tomorrow because this fest is getting longer and stronger, and it starts on Thursday instead of Friday like it did in the past.
Lou, do we have to put up the spontaneous order tent, or could you just dump it out by the fireplace?
give me a choice. I'm going by dump it out, but I'm sure it's not going to put itself up. It's not going to spontaneously erect itself.
I'm disappointed.
What kind of spontaneous order tent is that if you have to actually organize putting it up?
Right, and there's a bunch of picnic tables over there in a pile where the tent is supposed to go, and apparently they have not gone about ordering themselves yet either. They're just sitting over there. So
you guys should back off about 1 inch. We're getting a lot of plosives.
Yep. That was me.
So what's the
anyway?
A little from Lou.
With the spontaneous order tent, if we write on it with blue chalk, it will rise on its own. It's an old.
I don't know what that means, but it sounds funny. Yeah. So tell me more.
There's going to be a guest coming here that I haven't seen in quite some time. I'm rather excited about that. As a matter of fact, when the announcement was made, there was a lot of happiness, to say the least.
We're talking about
that friend of ours that's going to be here.
Master Ben Stone.
Well, you didn't have to give that much information, but
the bad Quaker.
Yeah,
I can't keep it quiet about it because I'm excited. I brought a copy of his book. I'm going to get an autograph.
You guys still there?
Did we disconnect?
No, we're still connected.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, so the guy's on 4G out in the middle of the sticks out in Bumble Feinstein, Egypt are the ones with internet service.
Well, I'm in the same situation. I'm in the same situation
Are you operating off of a cell phone, John?
Yep, in the middle of the woods. Because that's where I live.
Well, me too, but I'm just in some different woods. I brought Bear Saskatchewan with me. So I think you and I may have met briefly at Porkfest a couple years ago.
Probably.
I think that was Porkfest 11, maybe.
Oh, yeah, I was at that one, definitely.
Yeah. So, yeah, I got a chance. I think I got a chance to at least say hello to you. I don't think we had any major conversations or anything like that. But weren't you supposed to be on a tour with Derek Bros?
Yeah, I was actually, but I've been dealing with health issues and everything. So I had to, I can really only make the dates that are on the East Coast that are located around me. And that's not going to be until after the end of the summer. So I wasn't able to hit the West Coast dates, unfortunately.
Okay. And what was that? What was that tour about?
Well, it was actually to promote the release of our newest book, which is called Manifesto of the Free Humans. It's kind of an expansion of the agorist philosophy that was developed by Konkin. It kind of just is a case study, just taking his ideas a little bit further and expanding upon them, and kind of putting together some of the scattered pieces of, you know, various lectures and back and forth email conversations between the people that developed those ideas and stuff. We dug into that, and it's just very solutions oriented stuff. So that's kind of what the tour is about and promoting.
Yes, a decentralization tour, if I recall, was a nickname for it. Is that
yeah,
right?
Decentralize Your Life was the name of it.
Okay,
and
that's catchy. Is this?
Yeah, it was just all about. Yeah, and it's actually free too. TheConsciousResistance.com/books. It's actually a part of a trilogy that me and Derek Bros put together. That kind of has the overarching name of the Conscious Resistance.
So, is Derek going to be presenting here at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest?
He's going to be in the area. I thought some people were supposed to reach out to him, so I don't know if they actually did or not.
Can you get him over here, John?
I can try, actually. I can definitely try. I'll hit him up tonight after the show and see what the deal is with that.
Yeah, page him or something like that. People still page each other, right? Oh, no, wait, that's texting. That's so it. I'm not the most tech-savvy person on the fiends. But it would be great if he could drop on out here and chat for a little while.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
Now, I'm not super familiar with Konkin. I know a little bit about the basics. What was his time frame that he was putting out all this work and how long ago was that?
It probably, I would say, started really big in like the late 60s and went all the way through to like the early 90s strong, kind of in the same time that everything peaked with Rothbard and Carl Hess. He was kind of contemporaries of them, and he had a lot of similar ideas of Rothbard, but was on a very different page culturally. And Rothbard was actually also kind of more in favor of dealing with politicians and, you know, cozying up with Washington people and stuff like that. And Konkin was really opposed to that. And he was kind of more of a, he was one of the few countercultural figures that I would say of like the early American libertarianism movement. And he came up with a bunch of different strategies that were specifically non-political. So his big thing was developing non-political strategies to the problems that we face.
Is this the same as agorism, or
Exactly. Yeah, he's the one that he's the one that actually coined the term agorism.
Okay. And what's the was there a movie about the agorism?
Yeah, there was a movie. It was called Alongside Night. There was some weirdness with that, though. I think that was talked about on the show in the past a couple times.
No, I saw the movie, but I didn't know.
Well, yeah. He spent $800,000 making a movie that looked like it cost $800, and he said it's the greatest movie ever made. Not Konkin. What's the director's name? Anybody remember?
His name is L. Neil Redacted.
L. Neil Schulman. Yeah, he's a good writer and a horrible filmmaker, and he's one of these people that if you tell him his film isn't good or his work isn't good, he says you're a plant from the government. He also has been kicked off of editing Facebook for many edits, adding himself into the agorism page on basically. He didn't have anything to do with coming up with it, but he was one of the first people to incorporate it into a work of art. And Konkin said that in his foreword to the second edition of that book. But you know, being an early adopter is not the same as coming up with it. And I would argue too that, you know, agorism has existed for about 3,000 years, possibly more. But, you know, as a
conscious... And Konkin even said that.
Yeah, that it's been around forever. Have we consciously defined agorism yet? I stepped away for a minute. If not, we're burying the lead. Have we just defined it?
We talked about it being basically a strategy of non-government solutions, but we just kind of defined it broadly like that.
Can you define it a little more for people who, you know, their idea of politics when we get back to the market, you know, for the listeners on radio who either think you're a Rush Limbaugh fan or you're a Bernie Sanders fan and there's nothing else when we get back from this trip to the market?
Worms.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Freedom Fiends! Helping the helpless! Freedom Fiends! Saving the universe! Freedom Fiends! Doing the things that I've
taking the world from the state! Fighting the forces of hate!
Oh, hi. I didn't see you come in there, people. Boy, I'm glad that didn't go out on radio. Yeah. So it's Freedom Fiends. I'm Michael Dean.
Edit it out in post-production.
Yeah. Our post-production is automated, so there's no editing that out. Yeah, we're talking with John Vibes here. Say hello, John Vibes.
New hello. Fiend,
latest fiend.
How's everybody doing?
I'm good. You're probably in a more rural area than the guys at the Michigan Peace and Liberty Fest are. You live in the sticks, man, huh?
Yeah, a couple miles down dirt roads, no neighbors, except for other family members that live in different cabins in the woods.
Oh, what state's that in? Do you want to say?
Maryland.
Yeah, I keep thinking it's upstate New York or something. Because, yeah, you actually have a little bit of a southern accent, though. Are you from? Because Maryland is technically the South, I think. But I don't really think of Maryland as having an accent. Are you from somewhere else?
I'm actually from Philadelphia.
Hmm. Nope.
I grew up in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that guy we're going to talk about later that that spoofed the Jerry Springer show is from West Philly. All right,
nice,
so
nice.
We got another segment here.
We were talking agorism before the break.
Yeah,
right?
We
wanted to define that.
Wanted to define agorism. Yeah, I mean.
So yeah, it's the use of counter economics, which is. economic activity that does not benefit the state. So you're avoiding taxation, you're avoiding regulations, and you're avoiding feeding the beast in any way. And a lot of people think that this is... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, it sounds like just an active disengagement from the state in any way possible.
Absolutely, and especially with an emphasis on the economic activity. And now this does kind of seem like a pipe dream to people, but actually in the book we laid out a few very...
What's the book called again? Your book?
Manifesto of the Free Humans.
Yeah.
We laid out a few tangible examples of how this actually has happened in the past. So... if you look at the fall of the Soviet Union, that was actually
primarily... Blue jeans and Bruce Springsteen, man.
Well, that and a lot of black market activity.
Yeah, I'm talking about... That's what I'm talking about, is the black market blue jeans and the black market Bruce Springsteen 12-inch cassette tapes.
It's not just that, though, Michael, because if you look at the Soviet Union and all the Eastern Bloc countries behind the Iron Curtain... The reason that they had so much black and gray market financial activity was because the regimes were quite oppressive. In the Soviet Union, they had implemented the death penalty for certain economic crimes. They referred to it as creeping capitalism because they were so wedded to the ideology of socialism and all the crud that goes along with that they just absolutely could not positively let anybody engage in market activity. And the reason that these people engaged in it was out of necessity. You couldn't go to the Soviet hospital and get the medications that you needed. The doctors would just straight up tell you, you need to go to the black market. Here's a guy you can talk to. Because, you know, just as we've talked about on The Fiends, the unemployment rate in the underground economy is always zero. Well, the supply rate in the black markets, because they ran on the profit motive instead of the warm and fuzzy workers' paradise motive, they were rarely out, whereas the official system rarely had what, you know, basic antibiotics. Heaven forbid you needed something serious as far as medication goes. And it wasn't just that. It wasn't just luxury items like the West German appliances. It was basic staples like foods and spices and everything else. The Soviet government, and all these state socialist governments, they strangle the economy. They get the death grip on everything to where you have to squeeze through their fingers just to survive.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Really old to remember all this.
I'm not as old as you, but yes, Randy, I am mature.
I remember the fall of the Soviet Union. I was actually in Germany on Reunification Day, and I think Lou was too, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But I was still younger than you at the time.
Yeah, well, I was carrying a guitar, and you were carrying a rifle for Uncle Sam, but you're actually carrying a spoon for Uncle Sam because you were a cook in the Army, not a shooter. And thank you for your food service. I can't thank you enough for that. And you finally wised up and got a real job. Worms.
Yeah, I could make beautiful music with any of them. Spoon, the rifle. Not the guitar, though. But I guess you'll play a mean CD. So a question that I do have, because when people start talking about Konkin and then also when they start talking about, well, Rothbard said we need to do this, that, and the other thing, what adjustments have been made to the modern times and modern technology to bring agorism into the forefront in your book? I apologize, I haven't read your book, but the things that you talk about for being able to move forward, and we can cover that when we get back from this trip to the market.
Meow, meow. Meow, 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 meow.
Meow, meow, meow.
Meow.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Yeah.
This is the Freedom Fiends. This is Lou and Randy. We are somewhere out in the middle of nowhere, allegedly at the 5th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, sponsored by the Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition, held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan. It will be kicking off officially tomorrow. So it'd probably be a good idea to get on out here. Registration is closed, so you don't have to register yourselves on the website. You could do that when you get here. They're taking admission at the gate. And a fair number of the people do show up and purchase their tickets at the gate. I was surprised to find out that over half do.
Yeah, because it's not all corporate like Pork Fest. It's a real fest.
What fest?
Oh, this thing they have back east sometimes that gets shorter and more expensive every year and has less speakers and more rules.
Over there in Somalia?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been there. I met John Vibes there.
Yep.
Yeah, we were all there together. That's right.
Exit. A couple years ago.
So yeah. North Korea wants to host the Olympics. Oh, wait. Were you guys done with something, or you want to talk about something else?
I did have a question for him.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. What are the modernizations that you've done to with the Agoras series and strategies to bring it into the modern day? Because a lot of people will talk about Rothbard and they'll say, "Well, we need to get out there. We need to do pamphlets and we need to fax stuff to each other." And it's like, "What?
Pamphlets?
What the fax? I mean, that's old school. You know, what about the internet? What about this, that, and the other thing?" And a lot of people they're still
that's going in out of context fiends. That's going in out of context fiends. Facts. That's old school. Lou Santafine.
Technology thing is extremely exciting in terms of agorism, because that the development of technology, at least in the past 20 years, has really allowed this vision to start to come into fruition. You know, back when all this stuff was being written in the 70s, 80s, and stuff like that, a lot of it, you know, seemed like fantasy. When you're talking about, you know, alternative currencies that are not silver and gold and stuff
that
like
that. That was a problem. A
now
big
we have
problem
Bitcoin.
With a, that was a big problem with Alongside Night is that, I mean, really to embrace agorism in any way in modern times, I think you're talking about, you know, crypto anarchy and crypto hippie kind of stuff, and, you know, in, not just encryption, but Bitcoin and all of the other altcoins. And Alongside Night didn't have any of it. It was made in like 2014 after Bitcoin was well established and there were already alt currencies, but you know, like everything in there is like ounces of gold and bars of silver and you know, some of these old school people, not just agorists, but a lot of old school libertarians hate Bitcoin and they think gold's the only thing. And, you know, they think Bitcoin's still a Ponzi scheme, even though if they'd bought, you know, $1,000 worth of Bitcoin, you know, a few years ago, they could have bought, you know, $30 million worth of silver this year, or gold anyway, you know, but converted to something they consider real.
Yeah, but they're also part of the old school game plan, and that game plan is only a single page long, and that page only has a couple lines on it. And they're the ones that say, well, we need to take over the government from the inside. You know, we need to get our people elected, and then we can pass some freedom laws. These are the guys that say, and they're gold bugs, and don't get me wrong, I love gold. It's pretty, it's shiny, and it does have its purpose. But these guys...
You can throw it at people.
Once a month, they put on their neck beard and fedoras, and they go down to the LP meeting, and the five of them get together for the county, and they talk about, okay, yo, here's how we're going to take over, and once we break this 5% of the local vote, and we have a chance of getting people elected, that's when we're going to implement our grand plan to do the same thing that the Republicans are doing now, but do it a little bit lighter.
Yeah.
So it's oh, yeah. And I think that speaks to a big problem, kind of like in the, for lack of a better term, quote unquote, liberty movement, is that I feel that a lot of people have a hard time coming up with new ideas and strategies or even expanding upon old ones. A lot of people just kind of want to rehash what all the greats said and did.
Yeah, John and I were talking about this the other day. We were talking about all of the Liberty books that are coming out now, you know, from Kokesh, and Molyneux was doing them before other people, and everyone's got one now. Chase Rachel's that douche, and, you know, everyone's writing a Liberty book now.
Chasing Rainbows.
Yeah, Chase Rachel's Rainbows. Yeah, and most of them are written by people who can't write for people who can't read, and they're just rehashing, you know, Mises, Spooner, Rothbard. There's not an original thought in him. And yeah, this was in a conversation John and I were having where I was telling about the book I'm writing, which is not called The Unconscious Revolution. It's actually called The 4.5 Rules of Life, and it's kind of a tricky. It's a book to trick people into liberty, because it's kind of a like my other book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, which old book, but just came out on Kindle this week. But it's a book about, it's kind of a self-helpy book, kind of with a lot of time management stuff in it. Does not use the word libertarian at all. Doesn't talk about Rothbard. Doesn't use the word agorism. But basically slips a lot of that in. So, you know, people buy it. Because all those other books, too, are largely written, except John's books is one of the exceptions, because John can actually write because he's written a lot of books. Takes a while.
I'll admit my first one kind of falls into the category we're talking about, though, I'll admit.
Yeah, everyone's first Liberty book does well, because it's everyone who's a libertarian's first book. But I wrote seven published books before I became a libertarian. So, you know, I knew how to write a book once I started. And my idea to write libertarian books to spread liberty is, don't write books that are just about liberty and libertarianism and anarcho-capitalism and voluntarism and heavy on theory and heavy on quoting Spooner and all that, because the audience for those books is people who already believe all that stuff. I want to write books for people who you know, kind of slip it in the back door. Can you say that on radio? You know, like I would say,
out of context,
I would say that Bitcoin, I want to be the Bitcoin of books, in that Bitcoin has turned a lot, like, there are a lot of people who participate in agorism using Bitcoin who would hate the idea of agorism if you sat down and explained it to them. You know? I mean, it's there's a lot of lefties who, they're what?
There's a lot of people out there, and you're seeing a lot of this in Detroit, the way the city government has collapsed and everything. These people aren't anarchists, but they're sure as heck acting like it, because just like those folks in Eastern Europe back in the old days of the Cold War, out of necessity
became capitalists.
Yeah, out of necessity,
John, back off a little
bit. They're doing other things. They're going outside of the approved way of doing things. So, like when Chasing Rainbow says, we need to form a political alliance with the alt-right, with the extreme right, because if we get them to support us, or if we support them on rounding everybody up and putting them in death camps, maybe they'll support us with economic freedom or something like that. And quite frankly, the alt-right, when the helicopters start spinning up and they start throwing commies out, half the people falling out of there are going to be the alt-right, because, quite frankly, they're just like the neoconservatives. They're a bunch of bleeding commies.
Ted Kennedy said this in, like, 1978 in Nazi Punks F Off. You know, it was making fun of punk rockers who embraced not Nazi symbolism and sometimes ideology. And it said, one of my favorite lines in a song ever, it says, in the real Third Reich, you'd be the first to go. I was like, yeah, that's it right there, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then these same people will talk about how Rothbard talks about alliances. Well, here's Rothbard's alliances. He decided that he wanted to work together with SDS, Students for a Democratic Society, people that wanted to bring communism to America on the war.
Boo. Front,
because they were opposed to the Vietnam War. Now that's great. They're against the war, great. But when you partner up with them and you think that a bunch of communists, you know, people that actually want communism, if you think that they're going to back you up on economic freedom like Rothbard did, no, you're an idiot. And quite frankly, Rothbard was just so concerned with making alliances, he wasn't even contemplating what would come out of it. And on the other side of the spectrum, he partnered up with the Koch brothers and was a founder of the Cato Institute. And once that thing got going, they cut him out and didn't give him nothing. I mean, there's a plaque to commemorate his participation in that there. They just said, thanks for being our cuckold. Yeah, yep. thanks for being our cuckold in this think tank. Yeah, useless idiot.
It's all right. Yeah. We know what not to do now.
Yeah. So when you start saying, hey, let's make alliances with our enemies because maybe they'll treat us right down the future, you're an idiot. Sorry. You're just
that guy's just trying to sell books. He's just trying to sell books and get clicks, just like the rest of the people we won't name.
Who is chasing rainbows?
Did you see? This week the big controversy with him is that he called his book the ANCAP Bible.
Yeah, that's pretty. I kind of got some crap for calling my book a user's manual for the human experience. Especially a lot of Christians said, "No, that book's been written. It's called the Bible." But, you know, he went a few steps further with that title. I saw that whole controversy, and at first I thought it was, you know, someone or like he had reviewed his own book and referred to it jokingly, you know, like it's the new ANCAP Bible, but is it actually called that?
Go ahead.
When you show up at the border checkpoints in Anfascistan, they say, show us your papers and tax returns. Are you a net taxpayer, comrade?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. You know, on Fiendtopia, it's kind of funny, too, how in any pool, the people that rise to the middle, you know, are the worst. The ones that show up a lot in the searches. And I'm seeing this right now with my friend, a good guy named Arthur Culbertson on the Fiendtopia group, who's pretty new to Liberty. I mean, I know this guy from back in the day from punk rock in San Francisco from the 80s, and we kind of fell back in touch recently. And he keeps posting these things in our private group that anyone can join, Fiendtopia. Like, hey, check this out. And he'll post something by Larkin Rose. And then I have to spend 20 minutes explaining to him why Larkin Rose is a douchebag and you shouldn't, you know, pay any attention to anything he says. Meow.
Yeah. Jack and Jesus.
See you guys.
All right.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
I love the Freedom Fiends, but in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
Donald Trump says he doesn't want a poor person in cabinet roles. See, I think his idea of a poor person is a little different than my idea of a poor person. Like, I consider, you know, someone who doesn't have a place to stay as poor. He considers someone who only has three houses as poor, probably. All right, so, and, you know, anybody who's like, are you guys communists? You're Donald Trump is a wonderful businessman. No, he's not. he got rich. And being rich is not bad, but he got rich in really sleazy ways, including throwing little old ladies out of their houses with government guns to their head to build a parking lot. He did. He used, what's it called? Eminent domain.
Eminent domain, yeah.
And you know, anybody who gets kicked off their property in eminent domain, as a lot of conservative, Christian, constitution-loving people in the Mountain West, because the Mountain West is where they like to do really big versions of that, you know, take people's ranches and stuff.
BLM.
Yeah, you have to remember that it's in the Constitution. That is allowed in the Constitution. Yep. So, North Korea.
There's a lot of stuff in the Constitution.
We were talking during the break, and I said the word North Korea at the same moment one of the ads said North Korea, like within a second of him saying it, and I wasn't paying attention, but it was random. It was weird. He was talking about how North Korea wants to kill you. I was talking about how they want to throw a big party. So, Dennis Rodman went to North Korea recently. Did you guys know that? He went again. I think there's a rumor that Trump sent him. That would make sense.
I remember he went a few years ago, but yeah, not recently. Yeah.
You know, if he'd never gone before, and this was the first time he went and Trump sent him, everybody would be like, of course Trump sent Dennis Rodman. But, you know, there's kind of a precedent for this, you know, basketball diplomacy. And he did play some basketball there. One of the other times he went, at least, I know of. I think he does it every time. I think it's the third time he's gone. Because that was what kind of brought down, like, started trade relations between America and China. This is when I was a little kid, was they sent a ping pong player over there. Do you guys know about that? You probably do because they parodied it in that movie about
Forrest Gump.
Box of chocolates.
Forrest
yeah.
Gump.
Yeah, that's why you guys, that's why everyone under Gump 50 over knows. There. Yeah, this ain't Gump. Well, I mean, really, isn't Dennis Rodman kind of a real life Gump, Trump kind of guy? He just seems like he'd be really good friends with Trump. I don't know. So North Korea could host 2018 Winter Olympics, Seoul, South Korea suggests. And we were wondering where they were going to have it. Like if it was going to be between the countries in the demilitarized zone. It could be the 100-yard try not to run on a landmine. It could be the outrun the German Shepherds. What else, Lou? What else, John?
I don't think North Korea is going to field much of a team, though, because anybody that can run, jump, or swim is already in South Korea.
Yeah, also, I don't think anyone gets enough food there to be a really good athlete. I mean, even when you look at pictures of their army, I mean, there's a crap load of them. There's a whole lot of them, but they're really skinny. They're not, they're not as burly as soldiers in other countries because they don't get enough food to put on the muscle mass.
Well, what they tell their combat athletes, you know, the martial arts and boxing and stuff like that, they're like, that guy has food. If you beat him, you can get his food.
Yeah. So, John, you had some thoughts about the possibility of the North Korean Olympics?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting, and it could possibly, you know, kind of put a halt on some of the tension that's been going on. I mean, yeah. We all know that it's crazy in North Korea and that it sucks for people there. But at the same time, all the tension between these countries is so dangerous for everybody.
Yeah.
And even if they are crazy, it's better for them to be getting along with people.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people, like, can't even remember. Like, they can't even tell you why countries hate other countries. Like, I'd be willing to bet there's a lot of people under, let's say, 50 or 40 in America who thought it was horrible when Obama opened up some trade with Cuba, meow, and, you know, said, oh, this is not good, they're communist, blah, and like, you know, but could those people name the reason that happened? And could they name the fact that John F. Kennedy's the one who did it, and the fact that John F. Kennedy postponed the embargo for 6 days so he could get a pallet of Cuban cigars in for himself before he cut off trade with Cuba? Nope. Yeah. Yep. If you're saying, if you're agreeing with your government that a whole people are bad because what their leaders in their country did 50 years ago, you might be a sheep. Don't be a sheep. Yeah, there's people in the world that want to kill you, but not all of them.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN or virtual private network from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Stop talking!
Intro.
I'll make something up. This is Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from the Libertarian Reeducation Camps, where we beat the non-aggression principle into you lovingly.
Well, you know, the Freedom Fiends app is called, the iPhone app is called Freedom Reeducation Camp.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that's different from the Pocket Alibi then, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You can't play the Freedom Fiends on Pocket Alibi. You can just play recordings of us saying things. Yeah.
So anyway, Bipcot. Freedom Fiends Bipcot. Is covered by a Bipcot no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at Bipcot.org.
Hey, John Vibes, you going to start putting your books out with the Bipcot license?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
That's a good idea.
Really good idea. Yeah, so I'd like to welcome Belfouche, South Dakota. Sorry. Oh, that was a cardinal mistake, man. We're going to lose stations. And Sundance, Wyoming, and the areas that those stations reach. We're talking about agorism in the last hour. There's one thing we didn't clear up. So agorism is basically a strategy for political change, for reducing the power of the government through economic means, largely. So I have a question. So if someone deals drugs and doesn't pay taxes, they're not an agorist. But if they deal drugs and don't pay taxes and say it's a strategy, are they an agorist? Is that the difference, John?
Exactly. Yeah, because so there's a lot of people that that take part in counter economic activity, but they aren't agorists. Kind of like the people that Lou described in the Soviet Union who were participating in the black market out of necessity. So they were working to starve the beast, but they weren't doing it on purpose actively. If we actually do it on purpose actively, we could be much more effective and actually make more of a difference.
Do you think it can take down states, or it combined with other things?
I think it combined with this sounds kind of hippy-dippy, but an evolution of consciousness, I think, is definitely necessary. And I think go ahead.
What would that look like? The evolution, what would that include?
People learning to treat each other better and just not have all this, you know, crazy culture war throwing dumpsters at each other in the streets and stuff. We got to learn our way past that. And there's no strategy that can get us out of this mess if we don't learn our way past that, in my opinion. I think it's a prerequisite.
I'd like to throw something in there. John mentioned going beyond just doing it. One of the things is, we talk about this with the people in the Soviet Union and all these different places, they're doing it out of necessity, but other than the necessity part, they don't really understand the meaning of why they're doing it. The way that governments operate is that they're parasitic. They are a leech sucking the lifeblood out of an economy with everything that they do. So I like a couple things that we talked about tonight. All this money that's wasted is just thrown down the rat hole of redistribution to politically connected cronies. When people get beyond the, well, I'm gonna do stuff off the books out of necessity, and they get to the idea of I'm gonna do stuff off the books out of necessity, and the reason that I have to do it out of necessity is because the government is a parasite and they're making it difficult for me to just take care of my basic needs, that's when people start to move on. I've said this 100 times before. Not participating in the elections is a good start, but not participating in the election results is where freedom is going to come from. When people say enough, no more.
Yeah.
So just get beyond it. And something else, I don't think that the backyard mechanic, the person that does auto repairs in his own garage, or the people that cater out of their own homes, that on its own is not going to take down the state. It's going to be a combination of different things. The state didn't just wake up one morning and be as huge as it was. There's more to soup than just hot water. There's a lot of ingredients in there, and just like one thing didn't make the state what it is, one thing's not going to take it down either. It's going to be a combination of all sorts of different things. It's going to be a stone soup of solutions.
Hey Lou, I think we're going to have to drop you because you're buffering a lot. You're losing syllables a whole bunch here and there. But that was a pretty eloquent closing arguments there. Do you want to try going and coming back or something? Or
I'll just go ahead and take the night.
Okay, you're buffering half. Like I heard half. All right, thanks for being on. Have a great time. And we'll see you next week. Worms. Bye bye. All right.
Worms.
Yeah. So you had a story, John. What is the story?
There's just another massive military waste story that I saw today. The Pentagon wasted $28 million on uniforms for Afghan soldiers. So I guess this wasn't even for U.S. soldiers. This was for Afghan soldiers. And it said that... let's see, the special inspector general named John Sopko, I never heard of that guy, found that switching to a camouflage pattern owned by the U.S. military could save taxpayers as much as $71 million.
Yeah, because they licensed they paid not only to buy a bunch of uniforms and not only picked something that doesn't work in Afghanistan for the Afghani soldiers that the U.S. is arming to try to get out of Afghanistan. But a lot of them are just taking their weapons and training and joining ISIS. That's happening in a lot of places in the world. I've actually heard, like, you know, because the U.S. is also taking out a lot of enemies of ISIS. I've heard the United States Air Force called the Air Force for ISIS, which is freaky and weird. But let's put on our minarchist hat for a second and pretend that it's a good idea for, first of all, for governments to exist, and second of all, for the United States government to spend an unbelievable amount of money arming and training soldiers in Afghanistan. And actually, as everyone who reads anything other than the mainstream news now knows, sending a lot of U.S. soldiers over to guard poppy fields for heroin production, which is, I finally found out the reason for that. You know, you've seen the pictures, right, John, of U.S.
soldiers guarding
poppy fields. So what it turned out is those poppy fields are owned by people who are the friends of America this week. And, you know, there's not much else that grows over there because it's so hot and so dry. And the only other cash crop they could really grow there would be marijuana or cotton. And, you know, they don't grow marijuana because opium poppies are more lucrative even than growing marijuana. And the reason they don't grow cotton is because Congress will not authorize funding U.S. soldiers to guard a product that would be in competition with American farmers in the international stage. So, nope, going to let them grow opium poppies, not cotton. And, you know, how's that war on drugs going? Well, you know, there's a lot of help from the U.S. government there. But, you know, so let's pretend for a minute that it's a good idea to go over and arm these guys. The person in charge of picking the uniforms made two huge mistakes. One is he picked a forest camo pattern. Now, if there's any hunters listening here, you know the difference, or soldiers, you know the difference between a forest camo, which is kind of like what they wore in Vietnam, was jungle forest camo. Well, that's jungle camo, which is closer to forest camo than desert camo. But forest camo is, you know, mossy oak kind of patterns. second, which, so like 1 or 2% of Afghanistan is forest. So really, you know, that's not the right camo there. And secondly, they picked a camo pattern that's licensed. They had to pay a royalty on every uniform made because somebody sat down with a computer and designed this camo pattern at some point, whereas the U.S. military has designed a whole bunch of them that they could use free. So whenever you hear about these military, like, oh my God, look at how wasteful the government is. You know, I mean, I've been hearing these my whole life. I mean, I don't know if you ever heard about this, but I think when I was a kid, the thing was $600 hammers. You ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah, and, like, all the stuff from the Halliburton days, there was a whole list.
No, I'm talking about, like, the Vietnam War era, like, the 70s. Yeah, back. Like, this first time I heard it was in the 70s. Heard about $600 hammers and $900 toilet seats. And, you know, politicians got elected saying, I'll fix this. Well, apparently they haven't fixed it. But I saw something today too. It was the mayor of Philadelphia made a statement to stop giving money to the homeless people there. He said, if you want to help them out, give to one of the, you know, city sponsored homeless outreach programs. And Steve Miller, Freedom Fiend co-host, said, and he doesn't often make political statements. He's kind of, he's a libertarian more or less, but he's mainly just a funny guy and a smart guy. And most of his posts and statements are about humor. But this is pretty funny, but it's also, you know, kind of pointing a finger in the right direction here. Is he said, you know, to his comment to this thing of the mayor of the city saying, don't give money to the homeless people, give them to city-run homeless advocacy groups. You know, Miller said, as if the city is going to spend that money any more efficiently than a homeless person who's going to spend it on booze, probably, you know. So,
oh man, I actually heard about that because I have family in Philly, and they were telling me about it. It's insane. It's going on everywhere where you can't even set up a soup kitchen for the homeless anymore.
Yeah,
anywhere.
And somebody said, you know, his problem, he doesn't want it going to the homeless directly because you can't figure out how to tax the homeless yet, which is part of the reason he's probably saying that. But also, there was actually the singer in Dead Kennedys back in the 70s ran for mayor of San Francisco against Dianne Feinstein. He got 4% of the vote, and he had a bunch of ridiculous platforms. But one of the platforms was to legalize panhandling but license it and have city-approved panhandlers panhandling with city-approved canhandling cans, and you know, at like 60% commission, like 60% go to the homeless and 40% would go to the city. All right, we'll be back.
Wow.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
Government, that's so square.
Indeed.
So we're talking before the break about another one of these crazy look what the government's done again, they're so inefficient stories about some wasteful choices in camo fashion for the upcoming fall line of fall fashions for Afghani soldiers paid for by the U.S. You know, you ever done LSD, John Vibes?
That's quite the question for me.
I'm soaking in it now.
Yeah, yeah. I once or twice, maybe.
Yeah, I haven't done any for about 25 years. You know, when you get the answer, hang up the phone, is what I heard from my hippie sister, older sister. But
that's good knowledge. That's wise words.
Yeah. But I remember one of the things that really opened me up to a long time ago, before I was politically active at all, was trying to do the maths And I'm not great at maths, but I can do, I can balance a checkbook kind of maths. But I remember, not necessarily while tripping on the evil pills of LSD, the devil pills, as they call them here on talk radio. I remember, you know, around the time I was taking it, like reading something in the paper about, you know, $600 hammers and $900 toilet seats or just something about government waste. And I kind of saw it all at once. Like, it just flashed in my head of all the programs for all the departments and all the paychecks for everybody involved and all the equipment and all the spending like a drunken sailor. Actually, not spending like a drunken sailor, because a drunken sailor runs out of money. But the government never runs out of money. And I thought about that and kind of grokked it all in this flash at one point back in the day of realizing, like, the math doesn't add up. It doesn't even add up when the deficit is factored in. When you factor in all of the unfunded mandates and all of the pensions and everything, it just doesn't make sense. Like, the deficit should
there's a big money pit somewhere.
Yeah. There's a big money printing press somewhere, and a lot of it is just devaluing money. I mean, you look at the fact that when I was a kid, you know, a dollar when I was a kid is like $6 now. I mean, that's an incredible amount of inflation. That's 600% inflation, which, you know, when it happens in a year is called hyperinflation, and there's some examples of that around the world. But when it happens over 50 years' time, it's just called business as usual. But
is that what that is? Is the time frame, like, if it's a
yeah,
is a year specifically like the cutoff for considering it? Because I had never heard that before. Like, I've heard the term hyperinflation before, but I didn't know. I just thought that maybe it was like an extreme version of inflation or something. I didn't realize that it had like a specific.
Well, different economists define it different ways, but one of the common ones is hyperinflation occurs when the monthly inflation rate exceeds 50%. Man, I would say it would be a lot if it's, you know, the yearly I mean, think about that. If your inflation is 50% in a year, you'd be hating life. And, you know, Venezuela is having hyperinflation or near hyperinflation now, and a lot of it is caused by, you know, all of these things that make sense to children, like, oh, we should ban making too much money and we should ban charging too much for things. And you just end up with nobody having any incentive. I'm not saying that the situation that we have in America of the capitalism that passes for true capitalism, that's true capitalism's good. Capitalism is what we have, and it's not good, but it's still way better than you know, Venezuela, where they send soldiers into stores and say, okay, everything's free now, and then people come in and take all the TVs and all the food and leave. And
then they ration toilet paper the next week.
Yeah, yeah, and they have, you know, the owner of that store has no reason to order anymore. If he's smart and has the ability, he gets himself and his family out of the country, which actually that's a thing that's happening with a lot of countries around Venezuela right now is quote-unquote illegal immigration. People are just leaving, and it's not that hard because the people look and sound largely the same, you know, especially from border sides of one country to another. They can blend in a lot easier than a lot of immigrants coming to other places sometimes in other countries. But yeah, man, that's hyperinflation. It's not good. But yeah, so when you
so
hear
you
these
had
stories,
a beautiful mind moment with
yeah,
the,
I did.
With the
I
newspaper
did.
There.
But it didn't harm me and didn't involve a breakdown and didn't involve things on the wall with strings connecting them. But yeah, that's a really good description of it. You know, I mean, I think the answer now, looking back on it, we'll talk about this more after the break, but it's like the answer is not making government more efficient. The fact that it's inefficient is why we're not in jail. I'd like it to be less efficient, actually.
Yeah, we want it to be as inefficient as possible.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself. a groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon. Your house is your property.
There's a cat on my desk. He's a desk beast. Yep.
Prior to the break, we were discussing government waste and government inefficiency and efficiency.
Yeah. We decided the name of the show. It's going to be Why We Shouldn't Fix Government. Because that's a good link bait title, but it's true. Why is it true, John?
Because the government does some really bad things. It's like an organization that does a whole bunch of bad things. So we don't yeah. really want them doing those bad things well.
Yeah, yeah.
To put it,
you know, put it this way: if they, I mean, I would say they have an efficiency rate of like 1%, possibly. You know, if you consider that a really well run private business probably has. Oh, I don't know, 40%, 50% efficiency rate, 60, and a really tight one. I think governments probably have around 1% or less. And, you know, I mean, can you imagine if the military had an efficiency rate of 95%, you know, of like if they got the best deals on everything and if they got the cheapest, best stuff they could, like a private business would, they'd kill everybody.
Hey, everybody'd be dead. There would be no more world anymore. It would be a total wasteland.
And I want to counter something that you said before we go on the break. You said, I introduced this idea, and you said, yeah, we want government to be as inefficient as possible. And I said, nah, because I would say Venezuela is about as inefficient as a government could be. I kind of think we're in a happy medium. People say things are horrible. I think things are pretty good. You know, you can generally get away with, if you want to use that term, you know, if you're careful and don't talk to people you shouldn't, you can get away with freedom in a lot of cases. I mean, occasionally governments around the world will capture one person and make a really horrible example out of them, like they did with Ross Ulbricht. And I'm not necessarily talking about
things in the news look bad and laws that they come out with look bad. And if you're like us and you're focused on these issues and constantly paying attention, things do look really bad. But you're right. Yeah. In your everyday life, if you're smart, if you're on your game, you can actually get away with a lot of illegal stuff. Not that I'd know anything about that personally.
Yeah, and I don't know if I like calling it get away with, but I can't think of a better term that people will instantly know what we mean. But, you know, I mean, sometimes you're even getting away with things legally, and, you know, they call those loopholes. And I've heard someone say, not sure who it was. It was some contemporary good rock star libertarian, like maybe, I don't know. Not the people are thinking of when I say that. But I think it might have been Butler Schaefer who said that loopholes are the windows through which freedom passes. I really like that. You know, like people look at loopholes as a thing to close. Square people, status people, people that want to control people and that are afraid of everything and afraid of everyone. You know, they say, we got to close these loopholes. And I say, let there be loopholes. And really, I mean, there's loopholes in everything, because if there weren't, we'd all be dead.
Yeah, there
and I'm including and I'm including in that people who consider themselves law-abiding, tax-paying, patriotic Americans. There's those people are in prison too, you know. And when you look at the news, things look bad. You're like, oh man, cops are killing people all the time. But you know, cops have always been beating up and killing people all the time. There just wasn't always a camera in people's pockets back
then.
Yeah,
I mean, you had Caesar's guards. You had, you know, all throughout history.
The Democratic Convention in Chicago in 1968 or 69, was it?
Exactly. Where, There's always been thugs that have been hired to keep us down. And we just have cameras to prove it now.
Whenever I see like someone acting up at a political event, you know, when, like, for instance, when there's, you know, some kind of press release that's supposed to be government sympathizers only, and Dianne Feinstein is up there telling us what we have to do to have more war and less freedoms at home, and someone gets up and yells something in the audience. I totally picture that the thought going on in those people's heads is, guards, seize him! You know, like something from out of the medieval days. But I really think, and that's what happens. Like, immediately guards come out and seize them and carry them out. There's a thing on The Simpsons that I thought about the other day that really sums up what I think most politicians think, too. There's a Simpsons where Homer is running for some office. It might be the one where he runs for garbage commissioner, and he's running against a guy who's voiced by Steve Martin. But he says something. He's talking to Mo, and he's complaining that his campaign isn't going very well, and it looks like he's not going to win. And he says, "I wish those people would vote for me. I'd make them pay." And I really think that's kind of what goes on in the mind of most politicians. But so I would say things are good where they are as far as inefficiency with government. Now, I'm not saying that it's a bad thing to try to reverse bad laws, but I'm also saying that it just takes forever, man. I mean, I knew people, I'm 53, and when I was 13, I knew one person who was like a marijuana activist. Actually, I was a marijuana activist. When I was 12, I wrote a letter to President Gerald Ford and tried to sound as intelligent as possible and asked him to please legalize marijuana, or I think I said decriminalize, and, you know, he didn't do it.
Did he write you back?
Yeah, well, his office did. They sent me back.
You got a form letter or whatever?
I got a form letter and an 8x10 colored picture of him, like his presidential portrait photo, and a letter that said, like, "Dear citizen," you know, like this is before they had computers. Like, now they could put in your name easily, but it said, and they could put in, like, a little of what you talked about. But this just said, like, "Dear citizen, it is very important to me as president to hear from you concerned voters about what you believe and what matters to you. I believe that together we can make America stronger," and I think it actually said "make America great," probably not again, but "make America greater than it is." Yeah.
That's priceless.
Yeah. And you know,
I had one of them like fake signatures at the bottom that like obviously wasn't a pen. Yeah.
And it was probably the first time I got on a government watch list. Although I was also reading Steal This Book by Abbie Hoffman back then, because I stole it from my friend who stole it from someone else. You ever seen that book?
It's commie book. Horribly
commie, but and you know, it advocates
reads as a teenager.
Right. Well, back then they did. Now I don't think it's even not around that much anymore. Now they listen to Stefan Molyneux and think they're wise, but I mean, the book advocates for violence, and it advocates for theft, and it advocates for aggression. And, you know, he was one of those people, did other bad things, too. Like you said earlier in the first hour, that a lot of those anti-war protesters in the Vietnam era, some of them were solid, but a lot of them were, A, they only cared because it was a communist country. You know, like if America was attacking another capitalist country, they wouldn't have cared as much. But what they really cared about was not being drafted. And wasn't it Nixon that ended the draft? And then all of a sudden, like 90% of those war protesters went away. You know, they were just trying to save their own neck. Yeah. Yep. Not saying he was a good guy, but that was one of my freaky first, like, early memories, man, is being, I don't know if I was 6 or 8 or what, but when Nixon was being impeached, I remember seeing that on TV. This is back when there were 3 channels on TV, too. There was ABC, NBC, and CBS, and then, like, we could sort of get an over-the-air. It was all over the air, and it was all black and white, and it was all really low def, and we could sort of get a channel from Canada across Lake Erie sometimes, but not very well. So we had 3.5 channels. And I remember watching, you know, President Nixon saying, "I am not a crook. I did not lie, blah, 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 blah." And then, like, a little later saying, you know, as of noon tomorrow, I will be stepping down as president of the United States. And I remember, like, asking my mother, like, what, wait a minute, I thought the president was the most smartest, bestest man in the world. Why is he in trouble? And my mother was like, well, son, it's complicated, which is kind of what you say when you're in a really codependent, you know, messed up relationship. Oh, it's complicated, yeah. Which, you know, we really are. You know, with our keepers.
Yeah, an abusive, like, Stockholm-type situation, for sure.
Yeah, but I got out of that really quick. I mean, I remember in seventh grade refusing to say the Pledge of Allegiance and sending me out in the hall.
Yeah, for me, it was actually sixth grade. I got lunch detention, and I had to write the pledge 100 times, but the worst part about it was he sent me out into the hallway, but in my school, we had these things called portable classrooms. I'm not sure if you ever heard of them, but they're like trailers that are outside of the school. Because the school was overcrowded.
Yeah, yeah. So they have a lot in California now.
He sent me out into the hallway. It was December. So I'm out there freezing, like, sixth grade.
Oh, man.
I wouldn't stand for his stupid, you know.
Did you finally learn to say it? I finally learned to say it when the football teams were threatening to beat me up for not saying it.
Well, after I took the detention and wrote the thing 100 times.
That'll teach you some liberty. Write this 100 times.
He told me that I didn't have to stand for it in his class anymore, like, after that. Which was weird.
Wasn't there a Supreme Court case when you were young? How old are you?
Actually, it was the Supreme Court case that, like, kind of prompted me to do that. And it wasn't even about statism. It was about the word God being
there. That's right. That's right.
Which is funny.
Yep. There was something in 1943. It was Virginia, West Virginia Board of Education versus Barnett. Yeah, so that's been around for a while. But I thought there was something in the 80s, too. I think I remember something.
It was definitely in the 90s when I was a kid.
What state?
I don't think that it was a lawsuit. I think that it was just a big news controversy. Like, some guy went to the news about his
I think they took out the God at some point. Isn't the pledge now one nation indivisible and not one nation under God indivisible?
That's a good question, because I think what you're thinking of in the 90s was, like, the push to get the word God removed. And I'm not sure if they were successful or not.
Yeah. You know, I didn't mind until the football team threatened to beat me up, you know, until the horizontal enforcement came down on me. I didn't mind it because I got to go out in the hall with the one other person that wouldn't say the pledge, meow, and that was the cute girl who just moved there from Canada.
Nice.
Yeah. Worms. All right, we'll be back with the redemption in the third act.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
I love the Freedom Fiends, but in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
Sorry, sir. An older boy told me to do it. It's just a phase.
The Russians did it.
Well, at least I didn't vote. It wasn't me.
I'm sorry I missed it. My axe were giving birth.
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys can hear that in Radio Land over the loud punk rock music that's me playing and singing there. But this is a free app called Pocket Alibi.
Don't feed the trolls.
And it's just a soundboard with like 120 different sayings on it of different freedom fiends saying things like,
"You can't say that on radio.
Get off me, Katie."
Yeah. And people should get this, and they can entertain friends at a party, and, you know, you can always have a disclaimer.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
And you can say things that would really baffle people, like,
"Oh, we'll settle this argument. Get me Lysander Spooner on the Ouija board, stat."
Yeah. Pocket Alibi, it's free, and it's on Google Play. We also have an app for the Freedom Fiends. The Amazon app is called Freedom Fiends Radio, and the iTunes version, which is also free, is called...
Can you say that on radio?
It's called Freedom Reeducation, Freedom Reeducation Camp, and both of them are a Freedom Reeducation Camp in your pocket. And they have different buttons for listening to the current episodes, or listening to episodes while we're live is a different button. Or listening to a streaming random feed of all 1,100 and something episodes. That one's pretty cool because you'll hear like tonight's episode followed by the first episode from like 6 years ago. It's a good mix.
Nice.
You know, we try to make these shows timeless too. So that's why we don't do a lot of talking about what's in the news. But real quick, so what's in the news with MTV, John? What are they doing?
Oh, I thought this was hilarious. So, a couple years ago, it might still be on, they had this show called Catfish, where people could, like, confront...
Is it old or new? I thought this was new.
I think, well, it was old. Well, it's like a new rendition of an older show.
Okay,
so
right.
So the older show was people would confront, like, dates...
They're school bullies. Right.
No, like dates that would put up more attractive pictures of themselves. So like say somebody would put up a really attractive picture of themselves online, and then you go to meet them on a date, and they're like something completely different.
I hate the show. You know who does that all the time? That. You know who does that is every author in the world except me. I always put like my latest picture, no matter how old and fat and wrinkly I look, you know. But a lot of authors, the generally, I would say their picture on the back of their book is between 10 and 15 years old, sometimes older.
I would say that's fairly accurate.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, with the new show, they're actually allowing people to confront their internet trolls, which I think is way more interesting, especially with today's whole culture war dynamic.
Yeah. Interesting, but I don't know. First of all, I think it'll lead to more internet trolling because people will try to get on there. Second of all, I think that they'll cherry pick like most reality TV shows do. And I think what they'll cherry pick. And do you remember that MTV used to be music television and used to have music? I do.
I was thinking about that earlier today.
Yeah, they should change the name of it. But yeah, so I think that it's going to all end up being like, you know, kind of burly, physically attractive, muscular people confronting skinny stick boy, "I'm your troll," kind of people. And just because I think that's what would work. Yeah, I think that would be the most interesting to people.
It would be funny also, if we could get these libertarian pod beefs to be on the show. That would be entertaining.
The word pod beef was created by me, and it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license, by the way. I created that word back in the first year of the show, because Nima Vidati, the guy I started the show with, is a rapper and was always up on hip-hop news and was talking about beefs, you know, East Coast, West Coast rap beefs and other rap beefs. And I tend to call them like I see them when there's people making media that's confusing or horrible or misdirected, or they're just bad people like most libertarians people have heard of. So I'd say stuff like that about them, and sometimes they'd respond, and I was like, you know, we got ourselves a little pod beef going here. Yeah, I wanted to talk about my friend Scott from Bloodlink Records, who he and some friends troll Jerry Springer. I'm going to put those in the show notes. That's some old school trolling. Like, two guys and two girls went on Springer saying they were all sleeping with each other, and they were punching each other on the show, and like, they were all best friends and none of them were sleeping with each other. That's and it kind of leads me to think that all shows are probably fake. I mean, I don't think Springer knew it was fake, but the, you know, they made up a story and Springer's people bought it and they got on the show. Worms. Good show, John. Good having you on. Let's do it again.
Yeah, thanks. I'll do it again sometime soon.
Yeah, stick around. We'll book some more. Oh, we got some booked. Worms.